is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and their marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And once again, it is now 1:10 a.m. Last Dance.
This is episodes, a theme.
Episodes 3 and 4. Definitely a theme. All right, give me your favorite moments from tonight.
Okay, so I took a few notes, and these are just things that I thought about that I didn't realize. Obviously, once again, I will reiterate the fact that, you know, when we're talking about early Jordan, I was born in 86, so, like, a lot of this episode tonight took place, you know, and they did a lot of Rodman stuff in the first episode, but in the second episode, they did a lot of stuff about, you know, Doug Collins, and I think it was actually a combination of the first and second episode, but anyway, of the night. But first thing, man, Doug Collins was sweaty, Mike.
He was a sweaty guy.
I did not realize how sweaty he was. But my goodness, that guy looked like he had, like, literally jumped in a swimming pool after the game. So that was the first thing I noticed. Second thing, I had totally forgotten that Dennis Rodman and Madonna were a thing at some point. I kind of forgot about that. I mean, now when I saw the episode tonight, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Dennis Rodman did date Madonna and Carmen Electra. That's pretty awesome.
And Toni Braxton.
And Toni, that is quite the trio right there.
I mean, and I'm sure there's a whole other long list.
It's not quite as extensive as, not as quite as extensive as Wilt, but probably.
Or Scotty Burrell, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. And I knew nothing. The other thing that really stood out to me is I knew nothing about the Scottie Pippen migraine game at all, Mike. I don't know why that never really sunk in. I mean, obviously, you know, I think
they downplayed that big time in the episode.
Well, Jordan kind of was like,
yeah, in the moment, that was huge. I mean, there was talk after that, kind of, could Scottie ever come through in a big moment? It was kind of like the LeBron Celtics, you know, leaving the Cavs and then melting down against the Mavericks the next year. It was like, is he mentally tough enough to get it done? And Jordan at the time, I know, was livid, and tonight they kind of brushed it off. And it wasn't, I thought they were going to make a much bigger deal about it and kind of go into more of the details and dig in a little bit more with Scottie and certainly a little bit deeper with Jordan, but they really didn't. But yeah, that
Scottie
was
really wasn't
where,
in the episodes that much tonight, was he?
Nah, there wasn't a whole lot of Scottie, but that series the year before they broke through, so that was the 90 Eastern Conference Finals. They lose game 7. Scottie's basically out for that entire game, and they were probably poised, had Scottie played and maybe played well, where they could have won that series. I think the Pistons went on after that to sweep the Lakers, although the Lakers were injured in that series. But I think the Bulls were probably poised to be able to get by
the Pistons that year had Scottie been not suffered from that migraine. And I think that was something that ate at Jordan until they were able to kind of get over the hump the following year.
Yeah.
And that leads into my favorite moment of the night by far. It wasn't even close when they showed Jordan the tape of the Isaiah talking about the walk-off after the Bulls beat them in the 91 Eastern Conference Finals. And Jordan, just before they even show him the tape, you know, and he's like, I don't care what you show me. You're never going to convince me that he's not an a-hole. And he's like, whatever he says is BS. And I just,
he said effing BS, Mike.
I understand. I started laughing though. Like
I will say I laughed at
that one. I laughed out loud. And then the other thing I laughed at was when this was the interview with current Jordan, and when they were talking about Rodman's vacation, and Jordan says, yeah, Phil came to me and said, Rodman wants to talk to you, Michael. And Jordan's like, yeah, that's not going to be good. And then Phil Jackson says, you know, Dennis needs to go on a vacation. He's like, Dennis needs a vacation. He goes, I'm the one who needs a vacation. And it just, that cracked me up for sure.
Yeah. I think that speaking of that, so there was a lot, I didn't remember that he literally went to Vegas. I vaguely remember, obviously, once again, I was 11 or 12 years old at the time. I vaguely remember them saying, we can't find Dennis Rodman. I remember that being on, like, the SportsCenter, where is Dennis Rodman? It was like, because I feel like ESPN was doing something cheeky, like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego theme song, but it was Where in the World is Dennis Rodman. And I don't even know if you know what Carmen Sandiego is, but anyways, it was a show on PBS a long time ago. Anyways.
I remember it vaguely. Okay, you do.
So I just remember, I remember them doing that. And I didn't realize he was with Carmen Electra. And I thought, you know, they interviewed her and she said, I won't say what was on the bed. So that's kind of telling right there. Obviously, Rodman has a checkered past.
She was hiding behind the couch underneath some sheets when Jordan came and knocked on the door to bring him back.
I didn't want, and her line was, I didn't want him to see me like that.
Yeah. So I don't know, I'm not sure what like that might have meant.
That's
but
open
I'm
to
sure
interpretation, Mike.
I'm sure it wasn't good. Yeah. I'm sure it was not good.
But I think it's funny because, like, you know, now we think about it, and I won't say that they take vacations because they do load management or whatnot, but, like, I think back to LeBron's
I don't think Kawhi was cracking open the Miller Lite and then hopping on a Harley and riding straight to Vegas after a game. I'm not sure that that's really what
I know, but I'm saying, like, I think about LeBron's first year back, you know, he went to Miami for 2 weeks and, you know, I'm not saying that right or wrong, or I don't want to draw comparisons to that, but there was a lot of people that kind of reacted to him going to Vegas. I saw a tweet, CJ McCollum tweeted something out. He wrote, every team in every sport got a player with Dennis Rodman mentality. They just don't have his talent, intangibles, and Phil Jackson as the coach who would let him go to Vegas halfway through the season. LOL. The Last Dance. McCollum wrote
It really is insane when you think about, if you're Jordan, a guy who's just driven beyond belief to win and has such high demands of his teammates, and then here's this guy who just says, hey, I got to go. And he's gone for, I don't know how many days it ended up being, 4 or 5 days. They can't find him. They don't know where he is. You know, he's not coming back. And Jordan clearly in that interview portion of it says, Phil, we can't let this guy go. If he goes, we're never going to get him back. We're never going to find him. And
yeah,
it proved to be at least true for a few
days. So there's some really good tweets here. Donovan Mitchell says, say what you want. Dennis Rodman invented load management. Mo Bamba wrote, there's a knock on the door and it's Michael Jordan and I hid. Anyone ever said that in their lives? Frank Kaminsky wrote, nothing like a good mid-season Vegas bender with Carmen Electra to get the mind right. That's a solid one. I don't know. It's just funny stuff. This is really, really good stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. The whole Rodman thing, it's kind of, you look at the totality of kind of what he was, and it was interesting watching his early Pistons days where he was just, he wasn't as eccentric. He was more of a quote normal person, at least publicly, and didn't have all the tattoos, didn't have the crazy hair, didn't have the crazy persona, but he was just a crazy defender and rebounder, but he hadn't taken it to the extreme that he did in Chicago, where basically he refused to shoot pretty much when he was with the Bulls. And with Detroit, he didn't shoot very much either, but it wasn't like his shtick to not shoot the ball. But he was just a menacing defender and rebounder. And then when he gets to Chicago, so much of his stuff, like you watch him with that Barbara Walters interview, and it's kind of like, is he putting on a, it was almost like he was putting on a show as opposed to it really being his true persona. I don't know. He's just a very interesting and different kind of person, to say the least. But sometimes I wonder if how much of that is a put on and how much of it is real. It's hard to tell with Rodman. Even in the interviews of him in the current day, you still got this sense that he was just trying to like build a character as opposed to being who he really was. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but it always seems like there's something a little off there.
Well, listen, the fact that he was on The Apprentice, did you ever watch The Apprentice when Dennis Rodman was on, Mike?
I never watched The Apprentice, not once.
Well, I watched The Apprentice. I was
with or without Dennis Rodman.
I'm sad to say that I watched that show because I thought it was funny that Donald Trump was the host of a reality show about business. I don't know why I thought that was funny, but I look back on those days and I'm like, I wish I had that Donald Trump back, because I don't like the, I don't go into that. Anyways, I just think he's just bizarre, Dennis Rodman. It's just straight up bizarre. And it's just interesting to see him talk and them talk about it, because like the other thing that stood out was obviously like they were showing the Detroit series, and I think that, you know, when Rodman was on Detroit, I think that was probably intentional that they were kind of playing the two episodes a little bit off of each other, because they had talked about, but like Dennis Rodman's cheap chop on Scottie Pippen in the playoffs, and like
right.
Then 3 years later they're on the same team, or 4 years later they're on the same team. I just think that was kind of an interesting little subplot, so to speak. I have to say, Horace Grant looks better than I would have thought Horace Grant looked, Mike. I don't know. I don't know what I expected, but I just remember Horace Grant with his goggles. And, right, he wore goggles, right, Mike?
He wore goggles, yeah, for a lot of his time with the Bulls. I think his first, at some point, there was at least one of the championship seasons that he didn't have them. I can't remember if it was at the beginning or at the end of their run when he had them, but I don't remember. But are you talking about modern-day Horace Grant looks better?
Oh, yeah. He looked better than I thought he was going to look. I don't know why, but, like, I kind of never really thought about Horace Grant since, I don't know, probably 1998. I don't know.
Horace Grant had a good line, too, about the Pistons walking off the floor.
I don't remember what it was. Do you remember?
I do, and he said, and then they walked off, and they were like a bunch of bees.
Oh,
that was pretty funny.
I have to say, I really, really enjoy the fact that ESPN's just really letting it fly, man. They're letting it fly. And you know, I think this is going to, I don't want to say it's going to set precedent for cable networks for when they're airing stuff like this, but all these other cable networks are afraid to air them in their like unedited phase. And like, you always see things edited down, and I don't want to say, I don't think that like, it, things need to have swearing in it to make it good. But I really think that a lot of what has been said in between the interviews and between the footage, I think something is lost if they don't have the language in there. This is my personal opinion. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. I think that there's an authenticity to it. There's clearly, if you've ever been in a locker room at any level, you're going to hear that type of language. And so I think it just speaks to the way that those guys talked in the moment, and in the interviews, they're just punctuating what they're saying. Again, the Jordan quotes about Isaiah and just the look on his face as he was watching that tape of Isaiah saying that, well, you know, that's just the way it was done in those days. And then I love the Jordan coming back, not at Isaiah directly, obviously, but through the course of that interview, saying that, you know, 2 years in a row, we lost game sevens and I shook their hand and I talked to every guy on their team and I paid them their respect. And that's just sportsmanship. And this is from a guy who was a ruthless competitor and a guy who wanted to win worse than anybody. And you know, it had to pain him considerably to be able to walk up to those guys after losing game 7 2 years in a row and being out of the playoffs, man, and then to have those guys walk past, have the Pistons walk past him, you can see how bitter he was. He said at one point, "I hated him then and I still hate him now." And his facial expressions when he was watching that video of Isaiah talking about how that's just the way things were done was just, that was hilarious to me. Cause you could just see the disdain that he had for Isaiah, which is going to be interesting. I'm curious to see next week when they get into the Dream Team stuff. Cause there's always the thought that Jordan was the guy who kept Isaiah off the Dream Team, basically gave an ultimatum that, look, if Isaiah's on this team, then I'm not going to participate. And that was always the rumor. And I'll be curious to hear if there's any talk of that, especially after tonight's episode, and just, you know, clearly the animosity that he still has towards Isaiah and that those Pistons teams. I think it'll be interesting to see if that gets addressed or brought up at all. I don't know if it will or won't, but that'll be interesting. I'll definitely be looking for that next week.
Did you catch Isaiah subtly trying to throw Bill Laimbeer under the bus? Did you catch that?
That Laimbeer that he kind of said Bill Laimbeer whispered in his ear that we should just walk off.
Yeah, I think he was subtly trying to blame it all on Laimbeer.
It seemed that way. Yeah, I got that too. Which is another kind of like snake move by Isaiah.
I mean, there's a reason that he didn't work out as a GM, coach, whatever. Oh, the other thing, I totally forgot that Larry Bird coached. I totally forgot that. I don't know why I forgot that, because I just did. But when they played, you know, they played the game with Jordan and the Pacers and whatnot, and they said, "Oh, Larry Bird on the sideline." I'm like, "Oh my God, I forgot that he coached," and I don't know why.
Seemed like Bird coached for long. I think he only coached for 3 seasons. Felt like he coached longer than that, but he did only coach, I think.
Well, he went from like coaching right into the front office, right?
Correct.
That's basically what happened.
Correct. Okay. Correct. But yeah, Isaiah Thomas, just kind of going back to him again, he was a guy who, I think, when you go back and you think about him, and you won't think about him because it was before you were born, but when he was at Indiana, he was kind of this, he always had that baby face and he had that big smile. And I think he's a guy who, I don't know, maybe it's just in his nature and his personality that maybe his career would have always played out the way it did. But he always strikes me as a guy that if he had been with a different team, with a different group of people, that he could have had a different career where he would have been more beloved. Because Isaiah was, I mean, he was good. I mean, I think today's modern fan, if you're under the age of 40, like, I'm sure you probably don't have much recollection of Isaiah Thomas at all.
I know him from a New York Knicks. That's what I know him for.
Yeah, so I mean, as a player, though, Isaiah was just phenomenal. And he was a small guy, but just tough and could score. And he was really just an outstanding player. And yet I think everything that you hear, read, see, both from him as a player and as later as an executive, is that he was kind of a snake. And I think it's always his baby face and his big smile always kind of suckered people in. And I think Jordan's look of disdain, if you could just capture that when he was watching that video, that to me just sums up how I think Isaiah is perceived in a lot of places around the league and amongst fans, which is kind of too bad because he was a great player.
Do you think there's any chance, and you tell me, that the reason that Isaiah wasn't as beloved is because people held him against Magic? Like, they played in the same era, and Magic was obviously beloved, and then there's Isaiah. Do you think that had anything to do with it, or no?
No, I just don't think. I think that the Bad Boy Pistons just played a brand of basketball that not everybody loved, and you think you go from the Magic Bird sort of beautiful game, passing and unselfish and all this stuff, and then the Pistons just ushered in this new era of defense and just beating people up and playing a different style of basketball. And I think that was part of it. And maybe there was some comparison to Magic, but I just think it was more their style of play. And to me, that's what led to people. I mean, Magic was just a huge personality, the smile, just the game, the flashiness. He was in LA. There was just more to love about Magic. And not to say that Isaiah wasn't great, but I do think if Isaiah had been in another situation, maybe with a different team that was more of an up and down team or that was more of a fun team, that I think he may have been perceived differently as a player. But there was always this feeling that he was kind of disingenuous, and then the feud with Jordan obviously didn't help his purpose, you know, his popularity, because Jordan was so popular. So it just kind of, Isaiah was kind of left in the lurch in that area. And then I think being left off the Dream Team, because if you look at that era and you think of 1992, Isaiah probably had, he probably had a pretty good case to be made for being on that team. Now, I don't know who you bump off. Maybe you bump off Stockton. Maybe you bump off Chris Mullin. I'm not sure who you bump off, but Isaiah had a right to probably be at least under consideration to be on that team, and I don't think he was ever under consideration, because I think Jordan made it pretty clear that, look, if this guy's coming, I'm not. So
interesting. Like I said,
I'll be curious to see if that comes up next episode, like I said.
Yeah, I hope it does. I want to hear about it, Mike. I want to know.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of good Dreams Team stuff next week. I think they're going to – there's supposedly the – I think there's tape of that – you know, their first practice, which has been out there, where the two teams were going against each other. I don't know if there's tape of the game that they supposedly lost to the USA Select team, which was like the college guys. It was Bobby Hurley and Chris Webber and Penny were on that team, where they supposedly lost in a scrimmage because everybody was trying to defer. And that's when kind of Jordan decided he was going to take over and take control of the team. And because at first people thought it was going to be Magic's team and he was going to be the leader. And then clearly it became... it soon became clear that Jordan was the guy and he was going to be the alpha dog. And I just think there's a lot of interesting dynamics. I'm really looking forward to that episode for sure.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see. I've heard the stories and seen the stories and everything, but I will be definitely, I was 5 or 6, 5 years old, 6 years old at the time. So I have zero recollection. Really, I think the first Olympics that I really have a recollection of is vague as the 96 Olympics, and I don't even really know that I could name anything that happened other than the bomb thing in Atlanta. That's really the only thing I can remember. I don't know. I can't speak to anything else like about the Summer Olympics that year. So I'm totally, like I told you last week, I don't watch a lot of shows live because I don't really can't stand commercials. But I sat and watched this 2-hour show with no with commercials, and I started it right at 9 and I finished it right at 11. So
it goes so fast, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. It's really fun, and I'm really enjoying it.
All right, the shot.
Ron Harper. Oh, that his quote was great.
I think Ron's a little misguided and a little bit deluded, but that's a great quote. Doesn't make Craig Elo feel too good, though.
Yeah,
first
I'm surprised
of all,
they didn't interview Craig Elo for this, Mike.
First of all, he has to get the shot taken over him, and he has to see that. Just, I wonder how many times he's seen that shot in his life.
A lot.
And he has to go out of his way and basically not watch basketball to avoid seeing it. And so there's that. And then you think, and I don't know how much you remember about that, but the fact that he had the game-winning layup.
Yep. I knew that. That's always a fun trivia question that I always throw at people, because a lot of people don't even remember that, obviously. Even Cleveland Cavaliers fans, I'd ask my dad, I'd say to my dad, like, "Dad, who hit the layup before Jordan hit the shot?" And he couldn't tell me that. I mean, my dad was a pretty good basketball fan. He had gone to games down at Richfield and things. He couldn't tell me it was Elo. Like, I knew that, but
I think the thing that's even less remembered is who hit the shot before the shot, that shot.
That's Jordan.
Jordan, with 6 seconds to go, makes that other little jumper in the lane. So Jordan basically hit what in theory could have been 2 game winners in the last 6 seconds. So people remember the clutch, obviously the shot, but then there was another shot prior to that that he made was 6 seconds ago, that little jumper going down the right side of the key, pulled up from about, I don't know, 10 or 12 feet and knocked that one in was 6 seconds ago. And if the Cavs don't score, or Elo misses that layup or whatever happens, then that becomes the game-winning shot and pushes them past the Cavs.
I have a question for you, Mike.
Sure,
do you think the Cavs' trajectory, if they don't lose that game, like say the Elo's shot goes in and then not that Jordan misses his, but the Bulls don't score. Does the Cavs' trajectory change? I mean, do they stand a chance against Detroit?
I mean, I think they stand a chance in to some degree. The problem with that Cavs team, in my opinion, is that it was such a team of, this is going to sound the wrong, come out the wrong way, but they were such a team of good guys from a standpoint of,
they didn't have a killer instinct.
They didn't have a killer instinct. And I just think that they always played hard. My recollection or my feeling about that team in the moment was that throughout the regular season, they were playing at their peak. They were playing as hard as they possibly could. And so when it came to the playoffs and when other teams kicked it into fifth gear or when other teams just had that one little extra ounce of effort to give, the Cavs just didn't have that little extra ounce of effort. They didn't have that little extra that they needed because they just were at full throttle all the time and they didn't have that extra gear that they needed. And when they came up against a team that had that extra gear, they just couldn't match that, and they couldn't match the physicality. I don't know if I would use necessarily the word soft, but they just didn't seem to have it, whatever it is. Now, the caveat here is that Harper gets traded, and that trade was, so the shot took place in the spring of 89. I can't remember the year Harper got traded. It might have been prior to the next season, but when Harper gets traded, and then obviously he blows out his knee and becomes a totally different player because he lost his athleticism. But if you would have kept a healthy, non-injured Ron Harper on that team, then I think the
November 16th, 1989. So he started the season, but then left. They got traded on November 16th, 1989, Mike.
Okay, so less than whatever, that game in the shot was in May of 89. So you're talking about 6 months later, Harper's no longer a Cav. And that was the thing I think that screwed up that team from a ceiling standpoint, from being able to reach their ceiling. Because they never ended up with another player who could do the things that Harper, again, could have done had he not blown out his knee. That guy was super athletic. By the time he was on these last three Bulls championship teams, he was a shell of himself athletically. Now, he was probably a smarter player and all that kind of thing, but he was a shell of himself athletically. And so losing him and then the fact that they traded him for what turned out to be the number two pick and turned out to be Danny Ferry. Ferry just never had – Ferry was a journeyman NBA player who never turned into the star that the Cavs hoped that he was going to become. And so that set him back in a huge way. So, but again – you're still talking about the rise of Jordan, and Jordan destroyed everybody in that era. You look at every superstar who came up during that time, whether you go Barkley, you go Karl Malone, you go Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, you go any of the Knicks teams. He beat everybody. And so to think that Cavs team was going to be the team that was going to keep Jordan in his place just because that shot doesn't go in, I don't buy that. Now, for that year, gives the Cavs a chance, and who knows, maybe they end up getting there. I think the Cavs won 57 games that year. I know they swept the Bulls 6-0 in the regular season, which I think a lot of people, unless you're a Cavs fan, you probably don't know that or remember that. But that was something that Jordan talked about in that modern day interview in the show tonight, was they had beaten them. The Cavs have beaten the Bulls six times. But I don't think it changes the trajectory overall. I mean, Jordan obviously is still coming, and he's not, even had he lost that game, I don't think the trajectory of either of those teams has changed unless the Cavs, you rewrite history and they don't trade Man, Harper, and then maybe their ceiling is higher. But I don't think it matters.
I did not realize how bad that Ron Harper trade is. Here, do you know, you remember all the details? Ron Harper, 1990 first round pick, a 1991 second round pick, and a 1992 first round pick to the Clippers for Danny Ferry and Reggie Williams. Oof. That's, you know, the Clippers, we can't often say that the Clippers made a good trade. That was a good trade for the Clippers.
It was a good trade. And then I forget when Harper, but I don't think Harper even made it through. I think Harper blew out his knee.
He was averaging 19-5-5. I don't know when he hurt his knee. I know when it's, I read an article, I was reading an article because I was trying to do it.
I don't know if he had one healthy year with the Clippers for the remainder of that year, and then he blew out his knee the following year. I don't know what the timeline was, but he was just never the same.
He blew out his knee. He blew his knee out January 18th, 1990. So 2 months later.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, so clearly from that standpoint, not a good trade for the Clippers because they ended up getting a shell of the guy that they thought they were getting, but they didn't lose anything in Ferry, and they got those other draft picks, and it was a bad trade for the Cavs. There were rumors at the time that the Cavs didn't like who Harper was hanging around with and that kind of thing, and I don't know, it was a bad trade. It was a bad trade in the moment, and it looked worse and worse as time went on.
Yep.
A couple other things that stood out for me. I was cracking up with the Scotty Burrell on the plane and Jordan talking about, hey, he's out all night and he's got girls and, hey, he's an alcoholic. And Scotty Burrell saying, hey, don't tell my family. And I think that I'll be curious to see, because we talked about it a little bit last week, how people talked about, well, what's this guy, what's he really like in the locker room and what's he saying? And he gets on his teammates and he rides them and all this stuff. And I don't know if this is an example of that, that people were pointing to, that, boy, he's kind of mean-spirited. And I didn't get that sense at all from that. I think if you've ever been in a locker room at a high level, guys busting on each other all the time about stuff like that. Now, not necessarily in front of a camera, but at that point, those cameras are there basically 24/7 during that season. And so that kind of locker room talk and making fun of guys, making fun of your teammates and going back and forth with people, that stuff happens all the time. And if that's the worst of what we see, and I don't know if it will be or it won't be, but anybody who's played sports at a high level, that stuff is normal in a locker room. And there was nothing there that jumped out at me and is going, oh, this Jordan guy, man, he's mean. I'd never want to be his teammate. I didn't get that sense at all from, at least from that.
Yeah. I didn't get it either. I think it's,
I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. True. I'm really enjoying it, and I can't wait to see where they go. Cause I have to imagine there's going to be some points that they're going to show that kind of, you know, that I won't say, I don't know, I don't think dark side's the right terminology.
But see, I don't think it's going to be, at least not from my perspective, I don't think it's going to be dark. I think it's going to be a guy who is demanding of his teammates. I think it's going to be a guy who likes to make fun of people, likes to test people, likes to bust on them. And I just think that, whether you like it or not, that's a part of being on a team. That's a part of being in a locker room. And I don't see where that's going to be something that is going to leap off the screen at me and be surprising. Yeah. I'll be stunned if anything that I see, I'm like, whoa, I can't believe he was doing that. I haven't seen nothing to this point that at all would shock me if anyone was doing it, let alone Jordan doing it.
Yep. Well, like
the Sniff, the Sniff brothers, man.
Oh, that was good. I did think it was funny. They showed the Jerry Krause dancing on the plane.
That, yeah, the Jerry good. Krause dancing was good. That was pretty good. Yeah, that was funny. I enjoyed that. And then I don't know who yelled, "Jerry, go sit down." I'm not sure who that was that yelled that, but that was funny. It was not a great dance on the part of Jerry, but hey, he's got to do what he's got to do. I really did enjoy though the Sniff brothers, how excited the guy was telling that story as he was bringing the cameras back into that little room with Jordan. I know that Simmons talked about that, how, and he said we'd see it more as the doc goes along, that basically Jordan was with his security detail in his hotel room because he was just so famous he couldn't go anywhere. And so maybe this is like the first glimpse into that these Sniff guys are the ones that he's hanging around with all the time, because there's just nowhere for him to go. He can't get out of the hotel anywhere he goes. He's mobbed. And I think I've told the story on the podcast. I don't know if I have or not, but when I was, I think it was between, I want to say it was between my sophomore and junior year. So that would have been like the summer of 1990, I think. I worked at Jordan's camp at Elmhurst College outside of Chicago. And Jordan was there, and he came in the one day, and he was there a couple times. And the one day he came, and he rolled up in like a black, I don't know, Ferrari or Lamborghini, something, I can't remember. And he pulled up right in front of the gym. It kind of had like a U-shaped driveway in the front where you come in one side and then go out the other. And he parked right in front of the gym. And as soon as he got out, obviously he's mobbed and surrounded by people, and they're kind of walking and following him in a row. And then when he went into the gym, people went out and stood around his car, like 10 deep, just standing around his car, having no idea when he was going to come back out. And they just stood out there the whole time, just waiting for him to come back. And it was one of the craziest, that was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And getting a chance to see him in person, I'll never forget when I was in a hallway with him. I just happened to be out, like, I think I was buying something like at the camp store, like buying a Gatorade when he came in. He came in and walked probably, you know, I was within 5 or 6 feet of him. And the thing I remember, there's two things I remember about him that stood out to me that were striking. One was how skinny his ankles were, and the fact that he was basically like, he was a walking muscle, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like, there was just zero body fat on him, and his ankles were so skinny. I remember that. And then I remember him being much darker skinned than I even thought he was when he was on television. And those were the two things that struck out me. It was just how, just the physical specimen of him being like, literally looked like, it looked like you had just taken like one of those, you know, muscle skeletons you see like in a doctor's office that has, so you can see where the muscles are, and somebody had just wrapped skin on him. And then his ankles were so skinny, and he was just had this, there was just a presence about him that I think is coming across in the documentary, that this guy was just, and he just had the charisma and everything that we're seeing in the doc. You could see it when you saw him, when you saw him live, and to be able to see him in person after having watched him, and clearly for me idolized him, it was just, that was quite an experience. It was pretty incredible.
I wish I could have experienced something like that, but obviously.
Well, the thing, the most disappointing thing is that typically
you didn't get to play against him, right?
I didn't get to play against him, because typically he would play with all the college guys on the last night of camp. So that was one of the things that everybody clearly would be looking forward to. But the week that I was there, the rumor was, I mean, he didn't come and play, but the rumor was that he was out gambling with Mike Ditka, Chicago Bears head football coach. That was the rumor, that him and Ditka were at the casino the night he was supposed to be playing. Now, I have no idea whether that's true or not true, but I do know he didn't play, and that was a huge disappointment, because to be able to say that you got on the floor with him would have been great.
Yep.
And I have one more Jordan story. I don't know if I told this one on the podcast or not, but while we were there, he was playing one-on-one against the campers. And so they'd bring a kid up out of the crowd to come and play against him. And Jordan just wouldn't let kids score. Like, the competitiveness that he had, you could see it even in these one-on-one games. Like, he just didn't want the kids to score. And then he'd go ahead and he'd get the ball, and he'd do all kinds of jab fakes and whatever, and then he'd score, make a layup, whatever. And this one kid, this is probably after he had beaten like 7 or 8 kids. So kid comes out and he dribbles in and takes this like wild, I don't even want to call it a reverse layup. Like, he kind of went under the basket, going from the right to the left, and chucked the ball up over his head. And it went way up and hit off the backboard and went in. And you could see like all the kid, you know, the camp obviously is going crazy. The kid's going crazy, but Jordan hadn't had the ball yet. So the kid gets up, plays defense on him, and Jordan's doing all these jab fakes. He's got the ball in one hand. He's kind of pumping it out in different directions, making the kid jump all over
the place. How old is this kid, before you continue, would you guess?
This kid's probably like, I would say 12, maybe 13, okay. Somewhere
okay.
In there.
Okay.
So Jordan's faking this kid all, gets him moving all around. gets the kid, fakes him kind of to the left. So jab steps or moves the ball to the left. Jordan takes a dribble or two, like out to his right, like almost to get to the wing. And then the kid's trying to recover, like from the, let's say, the left elbow back down towards underneath the basket. And Jordan, like, jumps over the kid and dunks on him. And, I mean, clearly he had set the kid up to jump over him and dunk on him. And it was just, it was crazy. Like, as crazy as the place went when the kid scored, when Jordan dunked on this kid, it was just pandemonium. I mean, it was crazy. So yeah, that would be a viral sensation today.
If it would.
Because
someone would have had it on video for sure.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun to see for sure.
Yeah.
That was fun to see. Anything else that stood out for you?
No, I think I'm enjoying the ride, man. You know, sports are still away. Someday it's going to happen. Well, you know, I know the first thing scheduled is this golf match, which I know you know nothing about because you don't follow golf, but Tiger and Peyton Manning are going to face off against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady, Mike. So that's going to be the first real sports that we're going to have. It's some point in the end of May. So I don't really know. There's no other sport. I don't think there's any chance any other sports are going to be back before then. So I'm just enjoying this while it lasts.
All right, any Phil Jackson thoughts?
Well, first I will say I didn't realize that Michael wasn't a huge Phil Jackson fan at the beginning, because he wasn't.
He loved Doug Collins.
Yeah,
you could tell he loved Doug Collins in the moment, and even in the modern day interviews, you could tell he still loves Doug Collins. And he brought Doug Collins to Washington when he came back with the Wizards. I mean, that's who he personally handpicked to come back to be his coach, and it was clear why.
Because
The one quote, Doug Collins put the ball in my hands. Phil wanted to take the ball out of my hands. And early Jordan thought that he was the guy that should have the ball in his hands all the time and everything should go through him and he had to do it himself.
His quote is, there's no I in team, but there's an I in win.
Right. And I think he felt that way. And I think that he eventually came to realize, I think the John Paxson stuff where they were in the huddle in that game against the Lakers in that first finals. And he says, hey, John's open. You got to give him the ball. And then you heard Jordan kind of narrate that of, I knew I had to penetrate in and kick it out. Pax was open and he knocked down. I think he was 5 for 5 in the fourth quarter of that game. I forget. I think that was game. Was that the final? Might've been the final game. Might've been the clincher.
It was.
So Phil was the right guy probably at the right time. And I think Jordan was resistant to the triangle and Tex Winter. And there was that controversy where Collins had Tex Winter go and wouldn't let him on the bench anymore. And I think that was probably, I'm guessing that was probably the beginning of the acrimony between Jordan and Jerry Krause, even though that turned out to be the right move. I think, especially if you go back to that particular moment in time, I think Jordan was riding hard for Doug Collins. And I'm sure if you went back and looked at it and talked to Jordan at that time or were able to get him to speak candidly, I'm sure he would have said, I don't want Phil Jackson as our coach. I want to keep Doug Collins. And that kind of came across in the documentary, but probably not as strong as it might have had you interviewed him in the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's anything else that stuck out to me. I mean, obviously there was probably something that I thought was funny or interesting in the moment, but at this point I don't really remember because we've talked a lot and it was 2 hours.
It's 2 in the morning.
It's 2 in the morning. Yeah.
All right. Do you want to briefly discuss the?
Yeah. So the news came out yesterday that once states begin to ease restrictions, which it looks like May 1 and May 4th. I think it's next a week from today at this point now, right? May 4th seems to be the date that a lot of states are starting to ease restrictions. Unless you're Georgia, then you're just going crazy and you're already easing restrictions. But the NBA is going to allow teams to have players report to their facilities. I think the main thought, at least from what I gathered, Mike, was that the reason that they're going to start doing this is they would much rather the players be at the facilities and finding some random gym, YMCA gym, and go play there and catch the coronavirus and then put them back at the square one, whereas they feel they can control it more now. Can they actually do that? I don't know, but I think that's their thinking. Obviously, there's no teams aren't going to be allowed to work out. I think the main reason that's the case is because there's still social distancing going on, and the fact that some teams are going to be able to do this sooner than others, and I think that would gain a competitive advantage. That would be my assumption as to why they're doing it the way they're doing it. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it makes sense to open the facilities and allow whatever one player, two players in at a time to be able to come in and get an hour workout with limited personnel there on site, where you can still social distance and do whatever it is you need to do. Like, to me, that makes sense. That seems reasonable. I still don't know what the reasonable scenario is for the league to come back. The amount of testing that they're going to have to do and the amount of logistics they're going to have to do, and then the public relations that they're going to have to work through to get this figured out. And I don't think we as a greater society don't really know what it's going to look like. I've had conversations with people, and I just don't know what it looks like. I have no idea what it looks like when we come back out of this thing. And so as a result of that, I'm not sure what these leagues are going to do. I'm not sure what the NBA does. I'm not sure how Major League Baseball comes back. Football, who knows? I can see opening the facilities. It makes sense because you can bring in one or two players at a time and put them at opposite ends of the floor, or let them work out or lift some weights or do whatever it is they're going to do. And maybe you have one coach or somebody from the team personnel there. But getting these teams all back together and putting these guys in close quarters and having them running into each other and playing a contact sport and sweating on each other, and I don't see it. I don't know how they pull that off, and I'm real curious to see where we go from here.
Yeah, I don't know. I legitimately think, and I know I've seen this floated out there, and Alan Stein, friend of the pod, also put something out. I don't know if you just saw what he put on Facebook tonight.
I did. I saw that. He wants a single elimination 30-team tournament, right?
Well, he said single elimination, but it only looked like there was all the 16 playoff teams. It was kind of disregarding the other 14 teams, which, you know, the reason I brought him up was the thought has been thrown out there that Disney World would actually be a really good spot to do the season. And I'm wrapping my head around it. You know, Disney's losing a ton of money right now, like a ton of money. But what do they have in Disney World that they have hotels that no one is occupying right now? You could literally put, I've been to Disney how many times? They've got to have 20 hotels, Mike. They could literally put a team at every single hotel. Like, they could literally spread them out. They've got buses already on Disney's property. You shuffle them in to the Wild World of Sports, which they have four courts that are completely suited out for videoing, and they could easily kit that for an ESPN or whoever.
If the return the playoffs in a bubble theory is going to happen, I think there's really only three realistic locations. Disney's one, Vegas is two.
Hey, listen, and the Vegas mayor would probably be all for it, Mike. Do you see that clip of her?
No.
She said that she wants Vegas. She was trying to offer Vegas as a control group and letting them open it back up. This is the mayor of Vegas saying, oh, we'll just open it up and we'll be I tried to make us a control group. You know, we need a placebo to see
nice.
If I was and I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, this lady is not getting reelected.
You never know.
And then what was the third spot you were going to say?
L.A. I think L.A., when you look at the number of colleges and places that you have within, you know, a short distance again.
But the California mayor already said there was going to be no sporting event, or the California governor said there were going to be no sporting events in the state the rest of the year.
I mean, that's fair. I just think from a venue standpoint that L.A. would have the number of venues that you would need to be able to pull it off. So I still don't think it's going to happen. I think if I was betting at this point on whatever it is now, April 27th, I still think there's no season. I just don't know how. I don't know how this gets done. I don't foresee the scenario where we can pull it off. But who knows?
I'm more optimistic than you at this point, Mike. I think that we will be playing the NBA playoffs the last week of June. They're going to start.
Wow.
I'm going to say that right now. 2 months from right this minute, we're going to have the NBA playoffs.
All right. Well, hey, that'd be great. If we do, that'd be tremendous. That would be tremendous. But I just don't see how we get there. I don't see the path forward to get there. But maybe I'm wrong. Yep. It remains to be seen.
I hope you're wrong, Mike.
I hope I'm wrong, too.
Okay.
I hope I'm wrong. All right. Well, that remains to be seen, as do the remaining 6 episodes of The Last Dance. I can't wait for next week. I'm really excited about the Dream Team part of it, and I'm excited to see some more of that locker room behind-the-scenes footage with this team. I think now they've set up pretty much everybody's backstory as far as the main characters. I'm sure there are going to be some Kukoc talk next week because Scotty and Michael kind of take it to them during the Olympics and set out to prove a point against him. So I'm sure there's going to be some Kukoc backstory next week. Probably the other guy that, I don't know if they'll tell any of Steve Kerr's backstory as part of this or not, but I think we're going to start getting into the meat of what the remainder of this 97-98 championship season is once we get through the Dream Team.
Well, I think they're going to, they have to spend an episode on him leaving basketball though. I mean, there's going to be a whole episode dedicated to that.
I don't think they got that. Well, maybe. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I guess there's going to be a lot of reaction from people, getting people's opinions, and I'll be curious to hear what he has to say. I'll be curious if they introduce any conspiracy theories to him.
I hope they do.
See what his reaction is to him. But who knows? I don't know if that'll be or not be. It almost feels like when you start really digging into all this stuff that they still could be going into, it almost feels like 10 episodes isn't going to be enough. This is going to definitely be one of those things when this thing ends in 3 weeks, I'm going to be crushed that it's over.
Hey,
I'm going to be like, I can't believe there isn't more of this. Like, give me more.
Well, there's going to be more. They taped Kobe's last season, Mike.
I don't want to hear. I don't want to watch. I don't want to watch Kobe's last season. I want to watch more of Jordan. I don't want to watch more of Kobe's season. Not that I wouldn't want to see that, but I guess what I'm saying is that as much as I idolize Jordan and as much as I stump for him as the greatest of all time, you can never give me enough Jordan content. I could watch. I'm endlessly fascinated by him as a basketball player, as a human being, as a competitor, just the way he played, just everything about him from the time he was at Carolina all the way through, even to this day, the guy's endlessly fascinating to me, and I'll never be able to get enough. And so, like I said, when this thing ends and the 10th episode is in the books, I'm going to be crushed that it's over, and I'm definitely going to want more. And I don't know that there's more to be had.
Well, maybe they could show us about the Wizards.
Jordan
and the Wizards.
Maybe. It'll be interesting to see if they talk about that at all.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see.
We'll see what happens, right?
We will see. That's why they play the game. Only in this case, the game's already been played. So,
yep, for sure.
All right, I think that wraps it up for tonight. Good episode on The Last Dance, episodes 3 and 4. Thanks for checking us out. Jason and I stayed up late. It is now 2:01 a.m., so we're wrapping up. We'll be back next week with another episode
of
The Last Dance. Hopefully, but episodes 5 and 6. And then, as those of you who have been regular listeners know, we're kind of changing up our schedule to accommodate The Last Dance podcast. So we'll drop another interview episode on
Tuesday,
late Tuesday night, and then another one on late Thursday night. So we'll have our normal schedule for the rest of the week in terms of interviews. So 3 interviews a week, and then our Last Dance special episodes early every Monday morning. All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, These playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.